Welcome to the Sunday Night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Christina J., a compulsive overeater from North Carolina.
Oh, thank you guys very much. I'm grateful to be here, and I'm grateful that Jennifer asked me. I had forgotten about the meeting she asked me, so I'm glad she reminded me. But well, I'm here to give of my I like to call it scattered experience, strength, and hope, because in 2014 I finally set a foot into a strong OA meeting called Vision for You. And I began to understand what this was all about in a very small way. I just knew I needed recovery. I needed something I heard on the lines that wasn't happening for me, as I had dipped my toe into many, many, many OA rooms through the years, starting in my 30s. I'm now 65. And it took me until a little over 6 months to get what I've got today. And I had almost 3 years at one point, and slipped out of doing some of the steps, and I didn't think it was a big deal, and was picking up some non-abstinent food here and there because I was in a lot of stress, and we'll talk about that as we go along. And finally, after a year and a half, I couldn't get out, and I heard many people talking about how they'd picked up again and couldn't get out. And I was like, oh, that'll never happen to me. But being a beautifully experienced relapser, I always told myself I could get back the next Monday or the next Wednesday or the next day after extreme suffering that I didn't want to put up with anymore. And this takes me to step one, which the meeting says how I use the 12 steps to get sobriety. And it's been a long, scattered experience and a trip. But I can tell you right now, if you're new, Sarah and Sharon, I think it was, welcome. Welcome home. So grateful you're here, and I know everybody else is too, because this is the doorway to a path that can be extremely revealing, very healing, very painful at times as we look at ourselves, and then beautiful as we clear out the vat of stuff I'll speak for myself, that I've stuffed down. You know, I get to clean that up, and I get to live free inside without fear gripping my heart and my gut, and living in self-centeredness and selfishness and all that stuff that I'll talk about. So welcome to this journey if you've been on it or starting again or whatever. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And as I kind of mentioned, it took me a long time to realize that I was powerless. I knew I was powerless, but what that means to me today is I'm powerless over the first bite of my compulsive foods, and that's different for everybody, but I'm powerless over that bite of my alcoholic foods. Whether it triggers me today, if I took a bite today, or whether it takes 2 or 3 days to trigger me, it will trigger me, and I'll get really uncomfortable inside, and I'll get those cravings that everybody hates. At least I hate them. I hate them. They're like a driving demon inside my gut that says, eat, 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 you know, and I can't. It's like an itchy, scratchy feeling in my head and my heart and my body. So what I get when I work this program and I have the food down is a neutrality where I have my meal. There's no trigger foods in it, and I don't have that itchy feeling. I don't want to eat. Now, the second part of this, that our lives had become unmanageable, I had no idea my life was unmanageable. I was in control. I knew what I wanted to do in life. I was doing it, and I was miserable. And yet I didn't know my life was unmanageable. That's so hilarious to me today. So it took me a long time to know how my life was unmanageable, and I couldn't know it. I couldn't discover it until I took this trip in the 12 steps. Because you don't know when you start. I mean, maybe you have some ideas, things aren't working out, your husband's whatever, your problems at work, people don't like you, you don't like them. Maybe there's some things that are irritating, and that's why you say you eat. Well, yeah, that's why I said I ate, and I did eat for those reasons. But I didn't ever say my life was unmanageable, because I was going to handle it, even if it meant staying up all night in fear, twisting and turning, because I was jealous or insecure or wasn't getting my way. I was going to figure it out, you know? And I would wake up nights sometimes and I'd have like this cotton candy brain. I couldn't see through it. It was like fog. I just like, I couldn't figure out what the problem was. That's unmanageability, man. So that's step one. That's step one. And I've really come to know what that is today, but it didn't know it at first. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Yes, I believe. I have faith. I always had faith because I had a very traumatic childhood and I just knew something bigger was protecting me from things that could have happened to me and actually should have happened to me from the trauma I went through as a kid. So I always felt like this presence. My mom always took us to church. I praised God in church as a little 10-year-old. I wanted to sing with the choir. You know, I was all into that. I would feel it. I would feel the emotions. I would feel my heart open. And then I'd go back into the world, and nothing was changing out in the world in my home. So I believed. But as I'll go along here and talk, I didn't really, I had faith, but I didn't really trust. And I didn't know I didn't trust. I figured everything I was doing was God's will. Because I had a career that I was chasing, and I just knew it from birth that I was going to do this thing and I was going to break down every wall, right? I don't think it says anywhere, any scriptural, spiritual literature, anyway, that we're supposed to go through life with a sledgehammer breaking down walls. But I had the tenacity and I was going to do it because nothing was getting in my way of proving to the world that I was lovable, that I could be validated by doing what I was going to do because I needed that desperately. I had a huge cut. A wound in my heart that I was trying to put salve on with this validation. If I just got mine, I'd be validated. Part of the problem, and I'll go back to this for a second, is that I was an overeater. So I couldn't control the food when things got uncomfortable, and my whole life was uncomfortable. I've just realized recently that my life was always uncomfortable, and food was always there. To give me that comfort, but then it gave me that discomfort, and then it took me to misery over and over, thousands, I don't know, maybe even a trillion times, because it took me so long to realize that the food couldn't do it for me. And I think that when we get into the habit of using food for comfort, it goes into our cells in many ways. It goes into our reaction box. This is what we do when we get uncomfortable. Automatic, like that, you know. And here's the food over here, and here's this. I made it, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I don't know. What's the quick fix? I'm over here with the food, you know. And that's how it went for a long time because I didn't realize that the first bite was always going to take me to hell. And even when I did realize the first bite was going to take me to hell, I'd say F it. When the pressure got too high, right? Okay, even in program, even when I'd had that 2.5 years and I started having a lot of pressure, it started sneaking back in because I was missing some of the steps, wasn't doing some of the steps. It's so important as we'll get on here. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. This is a beautiful, beautiful step. Turning my will and my life. So I just made a decision. Many people say it's an action step. Maybe many people say it's just a decision, but a decision to me is an action. It's an action in my soul and my heart and everything. But I still didn't know what it meant. I didn't know. And I thought, oh, I got God. I don't have to worry about this. I got Him. And I understand Him by God. And I love that third step prayer. That's one of the first things I heard in one of the OA rooms I went to. They decided to do the third step prayer at the end. They always had that. Those prayers and those little covers that you could pick which one you wanted to do. And when they read that one, I was like, yes, you know, because the end of it, I can be of service to others. When you remove all my character defects, I can be of service to others. And I thought that was the greatest thing that we can use our Who knew that our BS was going to be something great that we could share with others, right? It just cracks me up. But it is, because in the suffering, other people are suffering and they feel, I mean, I did. I felt ashamed. I felt guilty. And when I came to the rooms of OA and I heard people sharing honestly, without shame or without guilt, about eating and all the horrible stories, I mean, of getting in the food, of being lonely in parking lots, stuffing our faces, of hiding it around the house. I mean, I could go on and on. We all got the stories. I did all of them. And when I hear people sharing that, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm not alone, and I can be honest and share and be vulnerable. It's a huge gift. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Oh boy. I went to an OA meeting early on, and we were talking about the fourth step, and a woman said, "Oh, are you kidding me? I have to share these things. I have to make an inventory and share them with someone." And she left after the meeting and never came back. So it's a scary step, right? Because I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of the affairs I had. I'm ashamed of the ring I stole when I was 18. I'm ashamed of, lately I've been ashamed of how I judge people. You know, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty now. The judgments, the jealousies, all those things. And I saw, as many of you have gone through the fourth step, you see your patterns of selfishness, self-centeredness, how I want it to be my way all the time, how I'm centered. The world's all about me and what I want. My second husband used to say to me, and we've heard this on the lines, you want it all and now. You want it all and now. And yes, I do, you know. And it's a searching and fearless moral inventory. So we put our fear of rejection, of shame, and everything on the back seat. When I first did mine, I cried with my sponsor because I was so ashamed to tell her the things I'd done, because I always thought of myself as a good moral person, and I was just out to get mine. You know, I didn't realize hurting anybody, but in truth, I was deeply hurting myself. See, that's the boomerang. There is a sentence in the big book that talks about the boomerang, you know, coming around and almost cutting us to shreds. And my selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, and fears had almost cut me to shreds before I found the rooms of OA. The food, yes, but these inner things are the deeper wounds and pains we're trying to lift up and out. Once the food's down, we begin to look at those things with courage. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And here comes the humbleness, like I was just talking about, sharing with the sponsor. And what a relief. What a relief to say these things have been hidden in my gut for years and in my heart. Just say them to somebody and have the person just hold space and say, Christina, I've done those things too. And let me tell you something I did that was even worse. And I'm just weeping and weeping. And I feel so clear and clean when I'm done. And I take that hour that it talks about to take. It gives exact instructions in the big book here to take an hour after you're done and search your soul to see if there's anything else. And during that time, I prayed and I cried and I felt shell-shocked at the things I discovered about myself, because I always held myself on this high pedestal of good moral character. And I was going to help the world with what I was going to do, but I had to get mine in order to do it. And I wasn't calling this God into anything. I wasn't trusting that I needed to turn to someone and ask, because no one taught me that. No one teaches you that when you're a kid, or at least I didn't get taught that. Have faith in God and believe and say, you know, apologize for your sins and all that stuff. But nobody said, hey, what are you going to do today? Have you asked God about that? You know, well, what about that thing you're going to do, that big thing you're planning across country? Have you asked God if you're really supposed to go? No, I'm assuming he wants me to go. He's put it in my path. I'm gonna go. And it got me into so much trouble doing my own thing. Doing my own thing, you know. So I just love the fourth step, and I love the tenth step. I've come to love it more in the last few weeks than I ever have in my life. Because I'm finally using it like I should, and I'll get to that. It's step five, no, step six. Entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Sponsor would say, are you ready to have God? Are you kidding me? I want to be rid of this crap. I don't want this. I can't believe it. I'm ashamed of this stuff. Take it away. I can't believe that some people would say, no, I want to hold on to judgment, No, I want to hold on to being jealous, I want to hold on to being insecure. I want to hold on to feeling like people are looking at me and talking about me. I want to hold on to my insecure self-pity. Who'd want to hold on to that? Once we see through it, we see through it through the episodes in our life that have come along. They show us. They show us, and this is the program of awareness. Once we start taking these steps, we become more and more aware of when we're falling into those pits of self-centeredness, of selfishness, dishonesty, and fear. And if you don't know, what the big book, how they de the big book describes all of those yet and d defines them, you will find out as you take the steps, and you'll be able to see what selfishness means and self-centeredness and how we have a thousand forms of fear in our lives that drive all of these, they call them character defects. So yes, I was ready. And then that prayer, that seventh step prayer, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And it's a beautiful prayer. Many people get on their knees. I can't get on my knees because I have a total knee surgery and it's impossible to get on my knees. But I bowed my head and I prayed and I asked God. Now, this was my first time through, and it took a long time for God to even to begin to remove some of those because I didn't know. I wasn't surrendering them. I'd fall back into them, and then I'd have banana episodes because by God, I wasn't picking up sugar, but I would pick up, my non-abstinent, abstinent foods. And bananas really an abstinent food for me. When I'm working the steps and doing my thing and being close to God and doing my tenth, I can have a banana. I don't want 10 bananas. But when I'm in self-centeredness and fear, and I'm driven by these evil things, I feel like they're evil, and I don't work steps around them, then I'm gonna be into the bananas. It's just going to be the way it is because I'm not going to be into them anymore if I keep doing the work. But it's that door number one and two. I'm going to fall right back into those places that I used to do as a kid and coming up all through this program. So yes, I just love step seven. And then made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I had one amend that scared the poop out of me, and my sponsor said, write all the amends down that you are ready to do, and then the ones you might do, and then the ones you refuse to do. And we'll start, and many of you probably know this process, but we'll start with the ones that you're willing to do. And this will warm you up, start giving you the courage to realize that the earth isn't going to crumble, no one's going to put you in jail. Hopefully not. But if you do have to go to jail, this is the extreme of it. You need to be willing to go to jail. I mean, I've never com well, I did commit the crime by stealing the person's wedding ring, and I tried to get a hold of that guy, probably dead because I stole it when I was 18. But I found another way to make an amends that was beautiful, and it took 2 or 3 years for me to find that way to make that amends. And if anybody's interested in that, they can call me and we can talk about it. But this is where we make that list, and then we make direct amends to such people whenever possible. Why? One-on-one, heart to heart, eyes to eyes. Have the courage to face the person you harmed and to make amends. To have your heart open like a flower to that person. And even if they have a wall, you are opening yourself up. And see, the great service in that is that you're cleaning your side of the street, and you're also planting a seed in somebody that maybe needs to make amends to someone else someday. My mother planted a lot of seeds in me that I saw as a child that later on in life, they were a little tiny, but they gave me the courage to do things that I had to do in my life, like leave a man that was very verbally and physically abusive at one point. She planted the seed because she did it. Now, see, that's kind of far an example for this, but you never know who you're going to touch when you start working this program and giving your soul by working the steps, keeping those amends going. When you've harmed someone or living amends, where you just change, you just try to do things better. You try not to judge, you try not to project onto people. It's just a beautiful program that helps us walk a clean path of self. And we never become perfect. At least I don't expect to before I die. But we can become the people the world needs today. What have we got going on? There's hatred all over the place. There's disasters all over the place, especially on the East Coast right now going on. Truly, there's disasters everywhere. Because in every part of the world, there's children being abused and women that are allowing themselves to be abused and men. There's all kinds of crap going on in this world. At any given moment, there's disaster. And there's people that are hurting and using desire systems to avoid God because they don't understand it. You know, so we can walk the higher path. And this program teaches us how to do that. It's like I said earlier, it's revealing, it's healing, and it's beautiful as we go along because we become servants of a higher power within us. And I call it God, and I call it He for the moment, for the to be easy to, you know, to have an easy way to say it, but you can call it whatever you want. Call it love. You know, call it love. Love is saving me. I'm going to turn my heart to love. I'm going to believe in that higher power of love in my heart. You can call it whatever you want, but we need it. We need a higher power to turn to that's a personal relationship. We have our fellows, gods in skin, as some people call them, to reach out to. But some of my strongest, beautiful times with God in the mornings has been in two-way prayer, where I just pour out my heart. And if I don't have anything to pour out my heart to and I want to connect, I just start writing a gratitude. Thank you, God, for getting me through yesterday. Thank you for helping my body heal where it hurts. Thank you for helping the people that are suffering in North Carolina right now. This morning I woke up and I just was really feeling what it would be like to stand on a piece of land that used to have your house on it and your children and your mother or your wife or your husband, and it's all gone. You don't even have a pair of shoes. Your purse is gone. And I just, my heart broke in 1,000 pieces. And what I can do for those people is as much as I can do. I believe we all have our own journey, but that doesn't mean I'm uncompassionate or that I can't pray and try to do as much as I can. But my pain in life brought me to my knees, to a place of surrender. I can't judge what level of pain other people need, but I certainly don't wish this on anybody. I certainly don't wish addiction on anybody, but it's saving my backside. It's saving my backside every day because it's turning me to something bigger than myself that's allowed me to begin to live one day at a time. And that has been huge for me, but I'm getting ahead of myself here. Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except to do so would injure them or others. So there's some fuzzy lines in there, and I used to try to use that as a loophole. Like I can't get a hold of the person, what am I supposed to do? You know, and there's lots of ways to do it, and there's lots of great podcasts that talk about how to do it when you can't get a hold of the person. So I'll save that for you guys to research on your own, and I'm sure many of you know anyway and can share your experience with many others as I can. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 10. Yeah, the one I avoided for a long time because I got this under control. It's just such a little thing. Why do I need to bother anybody with it? I can handle it. It doesn't matter. And I'll figure it out in my head right now, and I'll just figure it out and realize that, hey, I'm in self-pity and I need just to get rid of it. No, got to take a deeper look. There's a beautiful podcast on Vision for You. Actually, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's on Vision, but I have the link if anybody wants it. Dawn B is a wonderful member of Vision and she did it. And Lois P actually opens it up. And I just recently stumbled across it because I was craving a deeper relationship with God. And how do I get that deeper relationship with God? I keep my house clean. Now this brings me to a question or a statement that's often said on Vision. Why would God care about my food? It's the same reason that we do the 10 step to clean house. Food's in the way. All this stuff in the 10 step is in the way. Anything that comes up is in the way. Irritation at the boss, fatigue, tiredness, depression. Where is it coming from? There's some fear driving it. My irritation at my mother, which was a huge one last summer. All these things we can bring to the 10 step. And if they're too heavy, you know, here's another thing I'll say. It takes me sometimes a day or two to figure out what my 10th step is because I go into this autopilot numb cycle. Something hits me in the gut and I'm like deer in the headlights, don't know what to do. It's the little kid coming up and me staring at the person, place, or thing going, I don't know. And then I go on, a control mechanism comes in, and I just go about my business. I try to get busy or do whatever. And then I'm so uncomfortable. And God keeps nipping at me. Write it down. Write to me. Talk to somebody. Pretty soon I'm writing that letter or I'm making that call and I'm getting a deep, deep, deep dive into what it's about. And there's where the healing is. For me, many times a quick 10 step doesn't work. It just touches the surface. And a lot of times it does work because I see the stuff right away. But for me, it seems like lately I've had to take real deep dives into these 10 steps and really write them out or really talk to somebody about them. I use a 10-step app. I forget the name of it at the moment. I just discovered it. Actually, it has the 11th step on it. It's called My Spiritual Toolkit. It's an app. It's very handy. I send it out to a fellow and I send my 11th step out to a couple fellows at night. But I've really gotten serious about 10 and 11. And 11 says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. There's that understood him again. That's also mentioned in step three. As we understand him, and I'll elaborate on this for a minute. What is your personal relationship with this love? How to cultivate that within you? Nobody can tell you what it is. It's so personal. It's your breath, it's your heartbeat. It's that place in the heart center that you can breathe in and out of. When you're staring out in the dark, I've heard many people talk to me about, I just sit there staring in the dark. What am I supposed to do? Begin to take an action. This is what faith is, an action. Actually, not faith, but trust. Trust is never guaranteed. It's a willful choice, a deliberate action, and can only grow out of faith. So the faith is we sit in the chair. Okay, I'm going to go to the chair. I'm going to have faith, and I'm going to have some kind of connection with God today. The action is doing something, picking up a reader, reading something spiritual, something positive, listening to a morning meditation, letting yourself sink into that place, breathing in and out of the heart space, doing a two-way prayer, some sort of action to get you out of this monkey mind. Because if I close my eyes, and I heard somebody say this on the line the other day, if I close my eyes in the morning, it's like the brain goes, okay, I'm on, you know. We're gonna take you some places today. We got things to think about, things to do, things to control, people to be angry at. And it just goes on and on. It's just crazy monkey mind. So I got to write. For me, writing is the greatest tool, as well as those readers. Once I begin to clear out a little bit, I can start taking some deep breaths and taking that action to breathe in and out of the heart. This has been the greatest meditation for me. Because when I'm breathing out of the heart and I put my mind here on the breath, right here, I'm breathing, I'm focusing on it. I don't have any thoughts. I realized it one day 2 years ago. I'm not having any thoughts when I breathe in out of this heart space. So there's a lot of things you can do in step 11. So this 10 and 11, so crucial to continued recovery, so crucial. And the faith to believe that the 12 steps are going to work. Followed by the action, which is the trust that they are going to work, the faith that you can connect with a higher power through doing these steps. Doing the steps is the action, the trust that they are going to work, because you don't have to discover your higher power right away. You just made a decision to turn your will and your life over to it, which took me a long time to do. But it's a beginning. It's a beginning. I don't have to do it right then. In fact, I can't do it right then because I don't even know what I'm holding on to. It took me all these steps to figure out what I was holding on to. I was holding on so desperately
Christine, you have 5 minutes left.
to fulfilling that wound, to getting that wound to heal through all of my own self actions. And I've gone through many spiritual experiences. The heaviest ones have been in the desert in something called vision quests. And I did 7 vision quests in my life, seeking an answer to my pain, seeking validation, seeking answers to my bad marriage, seeking answers to why I was reaching outside myself for so long. And I had no idea that it was going to take one simple big book, one simple plan of action. As they say, simple but not easy. Why? Because I'm in the way. I'm in the way, and I don't know how I'm in the way until I work these steps. So if you're new in here and you're starting to work the steps, give yourself grace. You don't have to have what people in years of recovery have gotten yet, because you're going to get there. That's the thing. And it's a lifetime, as they say in many, many meetings, it's a lifetime journey. The thing that saved me over the years was I never left the rooms. I might have been eating in the rooms. Might have been a relapse and hearing things I didn't want to hear, like how you have to put the food down in order to work the steps and da 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 da. And I hated hearing they were calling me on the carpet, but I kept coming. I kept hearing and I kept crying out, because as the pain got worse and worse and worse, and I've had some really bad pain in relapse, really bad pain, I just said I can't do it anymore. And I'd said that a million times. What I had to learn was I had to sit. I have to sit through the feelings. I have to sit through whatever comes up. I have to begin to sit through it, begin to breathe, begin to ask God for help, and then reach out. I have even reached out with a simple text and said to somebody, "I am uncomfortable and food is calling my name." Just the simple text got the disease voice out of there, exposed it, made me realize on a deep level, I'm in trouble. I need help. I need help. Faith that someone could help me. Action to trust that just making the text would help me. It's a simple thing. I have to get out of the way, though. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I've had, I guess it's spiritual awakening. I can't remember spiritual experiences and spiritual awakenings, but I'm the slow learner. And I think for the rest of my life, if I get graced with the big one, I'm going to love it. But for now, it's spiritual. I guess it's spiritual awakenings. I have them every day, a little one here and there. Some days I'm dull and depressed. But tonight for me is a spiritual awakening because I get to share my soul. We get to a point in life where this is what it's about. Because it's not about how I look anymore or being validated or standing up on a stage singing my ass off as hard as I could because I had to sing hard in order to get you to pay attention to me because I needed your love. I don't have to do that anymore. Today, I walk one day at a time. I don't know about tomorrow. And I just learned this in the last 6 months, people. I just have surrendered to this. Where else will I go? Back to self? Back to the future? Future forecasting? Back to reminiscing and regretting the past? No, my past, our past is a beautiful gift. No matter what it looks like, no matter how stupid or dumb we thought we were, no matter how ashamed, because as you get older, you think about, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. I can't believe what an idiot I was. You know, you go through all these things. But I want to see if my notes have anything else I want to say. But the thing is, the main thing is that we're blocked when we come in. The steps will help unblock us and reveal who we truly are. We recover our true selves that we were born with. Little girl, innocent, little boys, innocent, just out there, new in the world. And suddenly, the shit begins to hit the fan in our lives. Parents that are our higher powers, really at the time, we learn things from them that aren't healthy for us later. We have to create a new higher power, one that we would want, one we can trust, have faith in, and then take action to walk towards. So, if you can't feel God, because that's what we really need, the higher power, love, if you can't really feel that, you'll get there. Take the steps and you'll get there. Thank you for letting me share. I feel very grateful. I didn't really plan too much. I just really prayed that God would guide the way, and I knew that I needed to go over the steps with y'all. Step 12. I didn't really talk about that except the spiritual awakening, but we must carry the message. We must get back, because if we don't, we get back into selfishness, do we not? If I don't do 10, 11, and 12, I don't know what that is. We get back into selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, and fear because these things creep in. We have to pay attention and become aware. The more we do the steps, the more we listen to meetings, the more we share, the more we give, the more aware we get of what's going on in our head. And we can release that to higher power and begin to walk in love. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Christina. That was excellent.